I'd also like to point out that there are a few chairs up here in the front that are open. So for those of you standing in the back, there are also some chairs here reserved for the press. So if you're with the press and you want a front row seat, there's some reserve. If those chairs are not filled by the press, then others should feel free to take them. The bathrooms are out through that door in the back on my left where it says exit. And there is an overflow area out in the front of the office in our atrium area. There is a television out there, and the board hearing is being televised over that television. And also I'd like to thank Tim Hedges and the San Luis Obispo Police Department for being here today. Greatly appreciated. And that's it.
Okay, here we go. This is the time and place for a hearing by the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board for consideration of the proposed administrative civil liability for the Los Osos Community Services District. This matter has been duly noticed, and two parties have been designated for this proceeding, the Los Osos Community Services District and the Regional Water Quality Control Board prosecution staff. Since this is a prosecutorial matter, staff functions have been separated into two teams, which I previously alluded to. This is done to ensure that the board has neutral advisors who have not been personally involved in the prosecution of the proposed enforcement action. Okay, everyone has been introduced, and I've told you that both sides are going to have 2 hours to put their cases on. And by the way, if the board can ask questions at any time. And the way I do this is that when we start to ask questions and we're eating into your time, I'm going to stop the clock. So I don't want you to get worried that we're trying to take time away from anybody. That's not what we're trying to do. But sometimes it's better for the flow of what's happening that we interrupt and ask a few questions to get something clarified. So I'm going to stop the clock when that happens. Okay, the order of presentation will be as follows. Witnesses called by the prosecution staff, cross-examination of staff witnesses by the CSD, and I'm going to use the acronym CSD, which everyone I'm sure is familiar with. Witnesses called by the CSD, cross-examination of CSD's witnesses by staff, policy statements by representatives of agencies, policy statements by other interested persons, summation or closing statements by the discharger and regional board staff. Again, it's looking like closing statements will be taken tomorrow, not today. And that will also give both sides an opportunity to collect notes, develop their closing arguments, and to kind of let everything kind of filter in. Board members and board counsel and Mr. and Michael Thomas and board counsel may ask questions of witnesses and representatives at any time. Each person who testifies at this hearing, and this is what's different, folks, about this hearing than what you normally see go on. Everyone who is going to testify is going to take an oath. It's the same oath that you would take as if you were in a court of law. Everyone is expected to tell the truth. Each person who testifies at this hearing shall begin by stating his or her name and addressing an address unless the address has already been given. All persons who may testify at this hearing, please stand. And I assume that's most everybody, including public comment people. If you're going to come to the podium, please stand. But even if you don't plan to testify but are involved in this matter, I still want you to raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony which you will give in this matter is the truth?
I do.
Okay, thank you. All right, the next thing we're going to address, or what we would call in civil court, in superior court, kind of in limine matters. And these are matters that have been raised by the parties where they have some concerns about issues or procedure or things of that nature that they want to get some redress for. And I know that the attorneys for the CSD have made, in their correspondence to Cheryl and myself, have raised some issues about what is going to happen today, and I want to address those now in front of the whole board so we can get concurrence on how we're going to proceed, and then we can kind of clear that away, and then we can actually begin with the testimony. And first I'm going to deal with the documents. You know, there's a lot of documents in this case. There's hundreds of them. Both the documents and the regional board's files, and then the state, then the CSD has offered, or at this point marked as exhibits, documents that they would like to use in this proceeding. Those documents and their disposition is all handily summarized in a table that Michael has prepared on my behalf, and the parties and the board members have been provided that table. And Michael, who are... Okay, so now, has the CSD and his staff? Okay. This is the board's effort at getting its hands around the documents. It's not the prosecution team's efforts. I did this in consultation with Michael and with Cheryl. And I want to summarize what my rulings are as reflected in that table. Everything submitted after the applicable deadlines provided in the hearing notice is excluded. In this category are several dozen public comments submitted after November 17th and still coming in as of last night. And I want you to know that to the members of the public that have been submitting emails and letters up until last night, you know, I appreciate your interest in this. I can understand why you want to get your comments in. At some point, it becomes unruly for the board to deal with a lot of papers coming to us. That's why we have a cutoff. It's simply so we can manage the flow of information. I want the board to really be focusing on what happens here live and not to be trying to thumb through what came in last night. It detracts from what needs to be done. And those that have submitted letters late, you have the opportunity to still tell us those concerns and issues in public comment. Okay? Any item that was requested for inclusion in the record by reference but not provided is excluded unless the requirements of Regulation Section 648.3 of Title 23 have been met, specifically the requirement to identify where in the existing files the document is located and the portion of the document upon which the party relies. All of the documents excluded in this category were requested for inclusion by reference by the CSD. The CSD, however, made no effort to meet the standard set out in Section 648.3 upon submittal of the documents on November 17th, nor when I gave the CSD some additional time to make the showing by November 28th. So as of all those documents, except the ones noted in the chart, which prosecution staff made the showing for the CSD, are excluded. Some documents, specifically newspaper articles, are being excluded on my own motion. They are hearsay, not meeting the statutory standard in Government Code Section 11513. Newspaper articles are not the sort of evidence on which responsible persons are accustomed to rely in the conduct of serious affairs. And there has been no showing that these articles are offered to supplement or explain other evidence. So they are excluded as well. And folks, it is the language of that Government Code section which sets out the standard by which hearsay can be used in an administrative proceeding. Yes, Cheryl, go ahead.
On the first category of documents that the chairman described, the late submitted documents, I'd add that comments were actually continued to be received as of the start of the hearing. I believe they've been handed to Carol, and it's my understanding that the chairman includes those in that general category of exclusion as well, for the same reasons.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So,
Mr. Chair, before we move on, I have a minor correction on the master documents list 2, the prosecution staff's direct evidence.
Okay.
That was actually submitted on November 10th, not November 17th. Just so the record's clear, it was submitted by the due date.
Okay. Can you lead me to where you're referring to?
It's master documents list 2, the entire list of staff's direct evidence. It's items 1 through...
Okay.
149.
Okay. But it's accepted anyway. It's
right.
Just the date you're correcting.
Right. I just wanted the record to be clear that it was on time.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Chair, may I just have a point of clarification?
Of course.
Thank you. My name is John Seitz. I'm an attorney in San Luis Obispo. I hope I just have to say this once. My residence is at 350 Estuary Way in Grover Beach, and my law firm is at 1066 Palm Street, commonly known as Shipsey and Seitz. And I am the former district legal counsel to the Los Osos Community Services District. The prosecution team designated the entire administrative record regarding the Cal Cities litigation. And if these documents that are rejected in this list were in that particular, if I remember, 6 volumes that were designated, they're clearly within the possession. And I know that there's a number of newspaper articles that are in that and a number of other documents. Am I assuming that you're excluding their documents too, or if they are in the administrative record of the Cal Cities litigation and they appear to be rejected here, are they in turn now accepted because they were designated by the prosecution team? I just want to make sure I'm clear on, because we have
I'm going to let Cheryl
thank you.
Kind of respond to that.
Chairman Young can correct me if I don't understand this correctly, understand this intent correctly, but my understanding is the intent was that any document that was in the file is in the record through that method of introduction into the record because they're in existence identifiable and they're there. However, if they're incorporated by reference, and there was no way of confirming that they are actually in the file because the location wasn't added, they don't get added in by means of that incorporation by reference. If they're there, they're there, and they did come into the record.
So I have a clear understanding here. If the document is in the Cal Cities administrative record and it's reflected as being rejected here, the actual outcome is that it's accepted into the administrative record. For these proceedings?
Yeah, the rejection is through the motion through incorporation by reference, but if it exists in the file, it is in the record.
I still don't think I'm getting the clarity that I'm trying to request here. The prosecution team designated the Cal Cities administrative record, which is approximately 6 volumes, and I forget the exact number, but it's a large number of volumes. And so my question is my fear is that there are documents that are in that administrative record that has been offered by the prosecution team without objection by the Los Osos Community Services District. And if they are my fear is that some of those documents that are shown up here as being rejected may well be in that Cal Cities administrative record. And I just want to make sure that if they're showing up as rejected here in the list and they are in turn in the Cal Cities administrative record, that they are, for lack of a better word, not rejected. so that they are in the administrative record for these proceedings. I hope I'm making myself clear.
I think so, but just one moment. Let me see if I can clarify it for you. The problem with the motion you made for incorporation by reference was, without identifying the location in the file and the portion you're relying on, we don't know, and you hadn't provided it as an attachment or in hard copy or electronically to say, here it is, you can put it in your record. We don't know for sure that it's there. So we can't say we're incorporating it by reference. That's why the regulation requires that. But if the prosecution team, if it was admitted into the record as part of the file, which it sounds like it is, everything that's in that portion of the record is not rejected. So the answer to your question is correct.
Okay, I just wanted to thank you.
And so if what Mr. Seitz, if what Cheryl just said doesn't jive with the list, we will correct the list.
Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, it sounds like we may need at least a footnote to clarify that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Ms. Okun, do you have any comments?
We can provide a copy of the reference list of the Cal Cities record, a copy of the administrative record index tomorrow, if that would be helpful.
Mr. Seitz, would you like that?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, fine. And then we can maybe look at that and make sure that those documents that you're concerned about are coming in.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Okay. So to the board, I have made that ruling, you know, in advance on the documents. And if anyone doesn't object, then I will go ahead and we'll move on to the next issue.
Just hold on, take a look.
Wait a second, please. We have another thing we need to say about this.
About those records?
Yes.
And I guess that I'm sorry to keep interrupting here. This is the first time, not that we have always seen, I think, as of a week ago, Ms. Okun's list of documents here, or this list. But it says that certain documents, like I'm just taking a look at page 18, document 269.
The staff documents or the district's documents?
No, the documents that are listed in this document that was just handed to us regarding the chairman's rejection and acceptance of documents.
You should have three tables. There's a list one, list two, and list three. And if you could zero in on which list you're talking about.
He's referring to list one.
Okay, thank you.
Page 18, document 269.
Okay. Now, we may have had a computer glitch, so I'm not trying to represent anything to the contrary. But we submitted electronically on the date that we submitted the documents, the 10 copies here, I burnt my computer up. I'm sure I burned other people's computers up, transmitting every document electronically. And I also submitted a CD with those documents to the Regional Water Quality Control Board on that same date. And what I'm concerned about here is that, for example, if you take a look at page 9, document 132. It's shown as red, and it is shown as being not submitted. I'm curious as to whether or not how that determination was made, because it's our belief we hired a professional server to do these discs, you know, of documents, and we submitted them. And I had what I thought were assurances that all those documents that were in those stacks were also on this disk. So I'm just curious to know is how, like document 132 says, not submitted. I grant you, you probably was not able to copy the videotapes that are referenced in here, and I understand that objection. But I just want to make sure there's a certain clarity here on these documents that say not submitted and are actually documents and not videotapes. How was that confirmed that they weren't actually submitted.
I've got a copy of the CD here, and okay. I just checked it, and neither of those two documents are on there. Our staff did go through and compare the CD to the hard copies that were provided to make sure that, you know, that there weren't some that were only on the CD or only in hard copy, and they all matched. And so the list of documents is up on the screen now. In this particular document, the number 269, the August 04 transcript, I believe I do have a copy of that. I forgot to check before I came down here, but I think I do have it, and Ms. March thinks that we have it as well, and we can try to verify that before tomorrow.
Mr. Seitz, does someone from your office cross-reference to make sure that what was on the CD what was in the list?
This is what I can represent to the chair, that my office, I believe, submitted documents 1 through 30. And, of course, we cross-referenced those, and I think they're tabbed, individually tabbed, for the record. We also submitted a number of documents, and believe me, I know that there was like 8 or 9 banker's boxes that were in those documents. My office did not cross-reference those documents to make sure that they were in. But what we did is hired a professional, I think Sam was process serving, that's for legal work, to photocopy those documents for the record and also at the same time create a CD so that we can both deliver electronically to the Regional Water Quality Control Board staff and have a copy for ourselves, and hopefully we can use it up here. So my question really is I'm not questioning whether or not they were submitted. Believe me, I'm just questioning the methodology of making that determination that they weren't submitted when the district went through some extraordinary last minute under a extreme amount of pressure to get these documents before your body, that they weren't actually submitted.
Okay, I mean, that's a fair question. And the question then that I would pose back to you is, did anyone then just check on what the photocopy service did for you just to make sure they carried out your directions? And maybe you didn't have time to do that, but, you know, did anyone check?
I can represent to the chair that as to those documents after 30, no one in my office checked.
Okay. Well, Michael and Cheryl.
Yeah, I guess the one observation I would add, I think that we have the CD here, and it's up on the screen, and if you'd like to take during a break, you know, examine the CD yourself to see whether any of these things that concern you, actually, the way it's represented in the chart matches up to what's on the CD, maybe that would help, I don't know. But what comes to my mind in this discussion is just the difficulty of trying to put into the record on the last day of the submittal deadline such a huge volume of documents and what the purpose for those documents was and how they tie into the defense. It might be more, it kind of illustrates how helpful it would be if the district could explain why, what evidence they're relying on in their argument as they present their case. And that way, the board can pull out of that massive volume of documents what's germane. Because as it is, it's just boxes holding down the floor, unless there's some reason to think that it's tied to an argument in defense. Well, and that's the part that's made it hard to sort through on top of, and with this just illustrates that problem, I guess. And
I don't disagree, but and it's one of the reasons why the district continually requested a continuance, because of the large volume of documents that are associated with these proceedings and the tight time schedule that the district had. And I know the chair granted us some exceptions, and I'm not trying to argue that. I don't appreciate that. But the fact of the matter is we requested a continuance of the hearing date. And when you ask a small district like the Los Osos Community Service District prepare for what appears to be either a $44 million or an $11 million, depending on the high and the low, what's in there, to respond to damages at that level, And then we have these time frames that are extraordinary in nature for the district to respond to, and taking into account that the Regional Water Quality Control Board staff actually submitted volumes by designating the Cal Cities record, you put an extraordinary amount of pressure on a small district to appropriately prepare and respond to the gravity of this hearing. And I guess I may be trying to renew the motion to continue here, is that these are the types of issues that should have been worked out, and there should have been ample time for us all to work out prior to conducting this type of evidentiary hearing on such what I consider extraordinarily short notice.
Well, Mr. Seitz, let's do this. Do you have copies of those documents?
They're in my office and on my CD here.
Okay, well, here's what I think is fair in the way I would like to approach this. If there are documents that you want to use with witnesses or discuss or do cross-examination with, you know, get them out, and then we can look at them, and we can deal with those documents at that point in time. But, you know, when I see the list, folks, we have like 400 documents. There's a lot of documents. And, you know, we're not trying to litigate and deal with everything that's happened to Los Osos in the past 30 years. And so there's some limited things we're trying to deal with today, and I'm just trying to make sure that the documents are really relevant. And that is the test for admissibility into this proceeding, is whether they're relevant to the facts and issues that are at issue. So, Mr. Seitz, well, let's look at the documents. If you've got them and you want to use them with witnesses, you can share them with prosecution staff. Let us look at it, and we can, you know, rule at that point in time. But what I sense is you got a lot of boxes of documents that we're never going to even talk about in this proceeding except in the abstract. And they're really there for an appellate review process. And so...
And Your Honor, Mr. Chair, I agree with your statement in its entirety. The reason why we have these documents here is to create an administrative record on the chance or likelihood, no matter how you want to take a look at, that this is whatever decision is reached here today is going to be appealed. And, of course, when there is when you create an administrative record before an evidentiary hearing such as this, it's taken for granted, and I'll admit, we are not going to use every document here to cross-examine witnesses with, but we still have a vested interest in having those documents in the record for the purposes of arguing them potentially before a court. That's why I think that we had this requirement to get these documents submitted to this board consistent with your requirement that they be submitted on December 17th, so that we would have them here. They would be part of the administrative record primarily for the basis of further court action.
Mr. Chairman, may I just...
Of course.
Thank you.
By yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm John McClendon.
And what's your relationship to the CSD?
I'm the interim district counsel to the CSD. Granted, it's a CEQA case, but I recall a case from, I think, 2 years ago, 2003. It's County of Orange versus Superior Court, and it was a fight over an administrative record. And in there, the court said... very strongly that when fighting over whether or not to admit materials in the administrative record, the proper way is to always err on the side of over-inclusion rather than under-inclusion. And there was another case called Protect Our Waters, the Powell case, where the court rather humorously but pointedly made the same point. So I just wanted to bring that case law to your attention.
Okay, I appreciate that. And I think what I'll do, since perhaps these are documents that you're not going to be relying upon for the presentation of your case, why don't we set aside, you know, for a later determination as to what you want to get into the administrative record for any appeal that might take place. So I'm not going to close the door on that. If you need more time to go over those records, you know, I will, though, and I had asked this earlier, for some showing of relevancy and probative value, which is still is going to be the standard that I'm going to apply on all these records. And as long as it has some relevancy, then, you know, we will reconsider that. So maybe we can get past that. We won't exclude those that you are concerned about that may not have shown up on the list.
I hate to keep doing this, but I just want to make sure that, you know, my job here is to create the administrative record,
right,
and to represent the Los Osos Community Service District. We always had a problem with that request for relevancy. Not that we don't understand it, but what our concern, and again, it's the same reason why we keep requesting a continuance, is that burden of identifying documents and going through the relevancy issue was only served on the Los Osos Community Services District, while on the same hand, the prosecution team designates volumes from the Cal Cities case. And it's difficult for me to sit here and swallow that the burden wasn't placed on both sides when both sides have actually submitted volumes of documents. And I object to the thought that Los Osos should now be placed in a position of going through each document and providing a statement of relevancy and so on and so forth when the same volumes of documents have been submitted by the prosecution team and they're not under the same burden.
Okay.
And again, on that basis, and I continue to believe this, that in order to have an appropriate hearing here, this hearing needs to be continued to allow the prosecution team and the Los Osos Community Service District team to go through that exercise. I'm not a big fan of volumes and volumes of administrative record. I'm a big fan of having relevant documents. But how do we make those determinations without having an equal time for the prosecution team to sit down with their documents in the Los Osos Community Service District, going through their documents? And then if there's going to be a fight over relevancy, then we can at least bring it to this board for a determination.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Why can't we do this? Why can't we go ahead with a hearing? They can offer any documents they want, either side. And if there's a, you know, a relevancy issue, we can deal with it at the time. And then what I would suggest is at some point in the near future, both the prosecution and the CSD, if they want other documents in the administrative record, they work that out with you and our counsel. But there's no reason to hold up this hearing,
right,
just because of documents. And I agree. I mean, I think it's onerous. But it's not, if documents aren't relevant to this hearing, we don't need to rule on the relevancy today.
Well, I think that was my point earlier, that
there are documents
they're concerned about for the appellate,
right,
review process. That is not going to really have a play today.
And what I'm addressing is the CASD's contention that the burden is only on them and not on the prosecution. What I'm saying is the prosecution needs to do that same job if they want these other documents that aren't going to be presented today or tomorrow, but they want it in the administrative record. They're going to have to show, just like the CSD, that they're somehow relevant.
Well, I think before you actually jump to that conclusion,
okay, sure.
I think My understanding is, and Cheryl, you'll have to set me straight on this, that in these administrative proceedings, because the agency's actions are being targeted, that the agency's files automatically come into the record.
That's correct, and that's one thing I wanted to distinguish. I wanted to speak to Mr. Seitz's concern about the disproportionate perception of a disproportionate burden. This isn't a civil court proceeding. This is an administrative proceeding, and it's an administrative agency action, and it is arising out of an administrative file, out of an administrative permit, and out of an administrative enforcement order. And all of those elements that give rise to this action are rooted in a file, and that file is the basis of the proposed action. It is inherently relevant and the source of this action. The file automatically comes into the record on that basis. It would be an unnecessary consumption of time to go through and make that showing each and every time, because it is the foundation of what's at issue today. What you are presenting, in theory, in most proceedings in this setting, would be a defense to what the agency is asserting, and you would be presenting evidence to support your defenses, to say why they were incorrect, why you have an equitable defense, why the facts are different than purported. And you would be presenting documents that aren't already in the record to support that, or referencing documents that are already in the record to support that. To go beyond that into an entire realm of other information that we don't even know why it's being presented, I would argue, isn't by itself a basis for saying that's unfair or that the record needs to be continued. But the continuance is a separate matter for Jeff to handle.
Could I address the document issue?
Yes.
Looking through the responses to the request to admit documents, it looks to me like the rejected documents weren't rejected based on relevance. They were rejected because they weren't provided to the board or to its staff. So they can't be the basis for the board's decision, because the board's never seen them. Its staff has never seen them. And in many cases, based on the description, we couldn't even tell what the documents were. So it's really an issue of what's in the hearing record. And if either side wants to present documents as the hearing goes on, I think that's a separate issue than whether the chair has rejected anything based on relevance or whether either side has been requested to make a showing of relevance, because you did request that information, but neither side did that, and the documents were still admitted, the ones that were provided.
And I think Mr. Seitz's position was that they put everything onto the CD, and so their understanding is it should be there and should be part of what was presented.
The CD is what's up on the screen, and Matt Thompson is here. He's under oath. He was the staff person who went through the CD and compared them to the hard copy document. So if anybody wants to ask him about that process, he's dying to answer your questions.
Okay. I mean, the question was posed as to what procedure was used. Matt, do you want to tell us what
Excuse
you
me.
Did?
On November 17th and 18th, we received 6 banker boxes full of documents. On each document on the top of each box was posted the list of about 380 or 390 documents. Also accompanying those 6 boxes was a CD that contained a PDF version of everything that was in those 6 boxes. I first checked the PDFs, a copy of which is posted here, and noted those that were missing. Mr. Seitz noted document number 132. You can see from this list that 132 is missing. I then compared the ones.
And those notations do match up then with the bait stamp numbers on the documents. Is that what you're telling us?
Correct. I went to the hard copy. I then went to the hard copy and verified that the PDF, the CD, matched the hard copy contents. And that's how we verified which documents were missing.
Well, you know, here's a question I have, Mr. Seitz, is that as I scan that list, I see 123 is not there, 121 is not there, 129, 130, and, you know, we didn't create the numbering system.
I agree.
So I don't know what's going on, but, you know what, if there are, I'd like to get through this, but I want to give you time if you need it, and we can do that after today or tomorrow.
to make sure that, you know, you feel you've gotten your documents into the record, you know, that, that are relevant and you really want to rely upon. You know, I want to give you time to do that.
I thank you.
Okay. So
can I ask Matt a question?
Yes.
So if a numbered document, say 132, is not on the CD, you're saying that it also wasn't available in hard copy?
That is correct.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Okay. And then this kind of leads us right into the second request, and the overall overarching request by the CSD for a continuance of this hearing. And part of that is a claim by the CSD that their due process rights may be violated in the process of what has been set up today to adjudicate the prosecution staff team's ACL. And I should probably at this point need to let the rest of the board know, and then the public, that prior to receiving the district's written answer, which contained the third request for a continuance, I did participate in two meetings with both prosecution team and CSD representatives and or their lawyers, wherein they asked me for continuance of this hearing. The first one took place October 25th or 26th, I believe. Mr. Briggs, do you recall? And Mr. Blesky was there, and Mr. McClendon were there. And Cheryl was not there as our attorney, but Steve Lum, another attorney with the State Water Resources Control Board, was on the phone. Mr. Briggs, what date was that? 10/26. And at that time, that was essentially 2 weeks after the notice had been sent out for the hearing. And I had reviewed a letter that was dated October 21 from Mr. Blesky, laying out a number of issues that were of concern to the district. We discussed the letter, and I had asked both Mr. McClendon and Mr. Blesky exactly what was needed in terms of additional time for the preparation of their case. My chief concern was whether they needed more time to get witnesses together or to get documents together. And I think, if I recall correctly, and I'm going to ask you also, you know, to put your thoughts in on this, both sides, was that the main issue was that Gary Grimm was not going to be available to actively participate throughout the preparation of the district's case. And I had noted down that he was going to be gone from October 25th to November 24th. Is he here today, by the way? Okay. Is he still employed by the district?
He returned from Europe yesterday, we understand.
Okay. All right. How many people in his law firm, do you know? There's one?
Yes, one.
Okay. He must be a really special guy. My concern was that what was stated to me was the issue for Mr. Grimm's involvement, and I believe Mr. McClendon had told me this, that he wanted to prepare the district's answer in the format of like a motion for summary judgment with a list of disputed and undisputed issues. And so my concern with that was that Mr. Grimm could give direction to get that developed, that I did express my preliminary take on what was in the complaint, because that had already been issued, that it appeared to be fairly straightforward in terms of what the prosecution team was alleging, that these were time schedule date violations and basin plan discharge prohibitions, and that the defense to those need not be very complicated or elaborate. And I had asked if more time was needed for true preparation, and I was not satisfied really with the response that I got from this. I know the district has lots of lawyers that it can rely upon and has them, has had them from time to time. I know that Mr. Seitz has been intimately involved with the district going back for a number of years. But I did extend the deadline for the submission of the district's and I think the staff's further documents. Just the district. I think I gave the district some more time to get their answer in.
Right. We did not have an extension.
Right. There was a second request that was made to me, and that took place, I believe, on November 9th. And I think that's when we spoke with Mr. Seitz. You know what? Before I shift to that, Mr. McClendon, would you like to add anything? Well, before Mr. McClendon was present at the first request. I just want to make sure he can add anything to the discussion, or Mr. Bleski, if he wants to, about what we discussed.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The primary issue that I had was coming in as a brand new interim district council, being told by the those with institutional memory like Mr. Seitz and Mr. Buell that Gary Grimm was our go-to attorney for regional board and state board matters. This was his niche. And having him gone in Europe for a month plus was right during this critical time was very, very troubling. You probably recall that when you questioned me, I acknowledged that Mr. Grimm had offered to take his laptop, and from time to time he'd be places where he could have web contact. He could be out of pocket a day or so at a time. So with that, there was a certain degree of optimism. I'm being very candid here that we could do a lot more interfacing back and forth. Gracious in allowing us, I believe, an extra 2 weeks to an extension to accommodate the delays. The experience I ended up having was it was a little more difficult to get back and forth with Gary than we found. We ended up basically dividing the labors, Mr. Seitz and I, and I'm not sure that we actually were able to get it to Gary, to get his comments, to get them all incorporated before we were able to file. I recall a gentle spanking on some of the stuff I said from Gary, and so we didn't have quite the ability to go back and forth across the internet that we had anticipated.
May I ask a quick question, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Factual question. Just to be clear that I'm recalling the correct person. Mr. Grimm is the former board counsel for the State Water Resources Control Board, Office of Chief Counsel, that used to work for the Water Board as an attorney. Is that correct? Same Grimm?
He's got a really low bar number.
Yeah, I believe he is, yes. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I just might want to add, if I might, a little bit to what Mr. McClendon just said. I am the original attorney for the Los Osos Community Services District. But one of the things that we did at the very onset of facing the different challenges that the district was going to face is attempt to hire experts in each field that we thought that we were going to have difficulty. And of course, one of those was the regulatory gauntlet that the district had to hurdle, and we did hire Gary Grimm. I believe that, and I'll leave Mr. Buell, who can testify to this maybe better, because I was not actively involved in those situations in which Mr. Grimm was actively involved. For example, I think Mr. Grimm was actively involved in TSO 131. He was certainly active in making presentations, and he was certainly active along with myself, in facing regulatory challenges and litigations in hopes of avoiding why we're here today, quite frankly. He brings a certain amount of expertise, I think as your counsel has pointed out, in the area of these types of proceedings in particular and water quality issues generally. And we believe, and I believe, that the district's inability to have Mr. Grimms here clearly affects the district's ability to understand and address the issues that are presented in the administrative complaint. This is what Mr. Grimm does for a living. That's why we hired him. Although I think Mr. McClendon and I will probably do an adequate job, it certainly will not rise to the level as if Mr. Grimm was here with his background in this project, his background with 00131, and his ability to and his expertise in these issues.
Mr. Seitz, did Mr. Grimm have a chance to review the ACL before he left on his trip?
I am not aware that when he reviewed the ACL. I am relatively confident that he did review the ACL complaint, though. I don't want to...
Did he draft up a memo or anything? I mean, did he take any time to... knowing that there was going to be a hearing,
right?
That it was noticed that way, I'm just wondering if he took any time to try to put together his thoughts that might direct...
I think Mr. McClendon can answer that. I can answer for what I received on my emails at my office. He did respond to some of my emails or emails, but they were, you know, small blurbs. They were like, you know, a paragraph or two. What was curious is, of course, he was normally sending them at 3 a.m. in the morning, because I think that's European time when he could get next to a web. Thing, and we'd be sending them out. Sometimes they'd be a day or two later, but I don't remember my office ever receiving what you would classify as a long-term memo.
Okay.
But maybe Mr. McClendon has one here. I see he has it out.
Mr. Chairman, I don't
expect you to share anything that's
confidential.
No,
this says attorney work product.
Because he had there was 2 weeks, and knowing there was a deadline coming. The notice went out, and by the time we had our meeting in October 26th, at least that was about 2 weeks from when the notice was sent out. I'm assuming that you would have gotten him involved in the loop pretty quickly, but go ahead.
I did receive a confidential attorney-client memo addressed to me and the general manager, but not to Mr. Seitz.
Okay.
On October 17th, and where he says he would like to provide some of his initial thoughts and strategic considerations. This, I believe, he was running off to Europe and or may have already left by this date. But at any rate, and again, without divulging any confidences, that the two categories were the petition for review with the state board that's held in abeyance, and what, you know, and considerations regarding that, and then there was the second issue with some initial, as he put them, initial thoughts on the ACL complaint. Obviously, one thing he didn't have access to was any of the record over in Europe.
Right. Yeah, Mr. Seitz had mentioned that two things were kind of a concern to him, and that was his expertise in water quality issues and regulatory issues. And can you expand upon that? What really is it in terms of this proceeding with the time schedule violations that you see, you know, needing expertise in water quality issues?
Well, I was hoping that the chair would take my comments broadly and not narrowly, but that's okay. I understand why it would be taken this way. I guess what I'm trying to say is Mr. Grimm's practice. practice, as I understand it, is solely related to regional water quality control and state water resources control board issues. It's that general expertise that he brings. I mean, he knows the code sections, he knows these procedures, he knows the game, and that's why attorneys specialize, of course, is that they understand the intricacies, the timings, when do you object, when do you make particular types of arguments, when and how do you object to document production. I mean, it's just a general thing that you know, I'm sure your prosecution staff has expertise in this area. We knew that when we started down this project that we were going to need expertise in this area, and that's why we hired Mr. Grimm. And the board did retain Mr. Grimm. The new board did retain Mr. Grimm specifically to represent the district, as I understand it, for this particular hearing here today. And he's not available. I know this isn't a court of law, and I know that this is an administrative hearing, but it's been my experience that courts often grant continuances for the unavailability of counsel. And I think, and the reason why they do that is because it protects the due process rights, and if they have expert counsel, the judge or the hearing officer is going to get a better presentation. It's going to be much more narrow. It's going to be much more, hopefully more narrow, hopefully more focused presentation to a board because that's what they do. So I think that's my only comment in response.
Okay. No, I just wanted to say that this board has gone through lots of hearings over the years, and we frequently get lawyers, you know, representing parties that have no expertise at all. I mean, it is not a prerequisite. It is helpful, and I do grant that. But, you know, I do civil litigation. I'm familiar myself with, you know, the Code of Civil Procedure and how intricate that is. But there's a few statutes that apply in this arena. And the hearing notice has a reference to certain time cutoffs that we noticed. And I think things are pretty clear in that regard. But anyway, Cheryl, did you?
Yeah, I actually just wanted to ask about one more law firm that I see referenced in your materials. There's a McDonough Holland and Allen, a very large, reputable, competent firm in Sacramento, I see represents the district in the litigation. I don't know whether they were available to you in this process. I happen to be familiar with Harriet Steiner and Stacey Sheston as being both intimately familiar with water quality and regulatory functions. I don't know if they're available to you or not.
Let me respond. First of all, I will send on your regards to Harriet and Stacey and thank you on their behalf. We hired McDonough Holland and Allen to address certain issues that came up during the prosecution. Again, that law firm, myself, and your staff worked feverishly to avoid where we are here today. They worked primarily on issues of litigation, in fact, solely on issues of litigation that were before a court on various motions, hearings, and I think during my presentation I'm going to go into that in a little more detail. Gary, on the other hand, was hired for his expertise in the regulatory area and providing assistance to the district before the Regional Water Quality Control Board and the State Water Resources Control Board. Harriet or Stacy or Kimberly or Iris or any of those folks that helped the district, to my knowledge, never appeared in front of a regulatory body regarding any permitting processes, time schedule orders, things like that. Now, I want to make sure everybody understands here. Harriet and Stacy and McDonough Holland and Allen are certainly familiar with time schedule order 00131. I don't want to make any dispersions there. But they were not hired to address regulatory issues in front of regulatory bodies. They were hired once again to represent, to assist me, essentially, in representing the district before various courts.
Okay, well, certainly things are more relaxed and flexible in this proceeding than if we were in Superior Court. So, you know, there's a lot more leeway to do different things and to continue things. I want to get into the next...
Mr. Chair, just sure. So you know, I withdraw that motion for continuance based on the December 14th. If you were going to get onto our conversation, I'm sorry, maybe I jumped ahead of it.
Well, I was going to get to our discussion on the phone.
Right.
Because you did, state in your... in something that was presented to me that this was now the third request for a continuance. So if you're going to put that at issue and raise that at some point, I think it's okay. Fair that we, kind of address what the context was of that.
Yeah, I apologize. I may have gotten ahead of you. I recognize that I had a separate discussion with the chair and the prosecution team requesting a continuance based on this hearing being premature in light of the December 15th appellate court hearing.
Yes, Measure B.
Measure
B. Felt that the
under the circumstances, as I understand it, Measure B has been dismissed from the appellate court. So I believe that issue is moot, and all I'm saying is I withdraw any idea of continuance based on Measure B in the appellate court.
All right, and also as part of that phone call, you were also concerned that the state board kind of resolve its stand with the state revolving fund loan, and I had said, well, it looks like that hearing is going to take place anyway before December 1st, so that's going to get resolved.
Mr. Chair, I do believe, though, that there is another hearing set before the State Water Resources Control Board.
Well, that hearing, from what I understand, is simply for the State Board to potentially just reallocate money. So I think the State Board's position has been made clear to everybody where they stand on that revolving fund loan. But the point was we did have the discussion. Those were the two items that we discussed, all of us, for about 30 minutes or so. Again, based on that discussion, I did not grant the continuance after that.
And I agree with that. And, I just renew my appreciation to the chair for hearing a very long discussion on a very narrow issue.
Okay. I think the way I want to handle this with the request for the continuance is to get through as much of the hearing as we can at this point in time with the witnesses, and we can take this back up again. The district feels that, we really need some more time. If we need to continue this, at least we can, consider that. The board will help me in that deliberation. Prosecution team kind of weigh in on that. And if you can, at that point, articulate with some specificity exactly what you need to do, then we'll look at it again. And I have a feeling we're going to do that anyway for the documents, so we get those, resolved. And this proceeding may kind of take place where we start to get through witnesses, cross-examination, things of that nature, and we may start to limit things down and then get it continued for more narrow issues that may need to be addressed. So I'm quite willing to, consider that at that time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I understand it, the prosecution team is going to put on their evidence or their showing before the board, and after their presentation and before we put on our rebuttal, we would have the opportunity to renew the motion for continuance, basically. Is that the understanding?
Well, I was thinking after I want us to get through as much as we can in the way we have laid it out. If we get to the end of that time period and you feel strongly that you haven't been able to get something into evidence, there's something else you want to cover, you know, we'll consider it.
I guess my question is, and I hate to be picky, but I really want to have a clear understanding.
Well, that's okay, Mr. Seitz. As a lawyer, I can appreciate pickiness.
We would like the opportunity at the end of the prosecution team presentation to renew our position as to having Mr. Grimm here, because obviously this is, or is that ruling now off the table?
Well, let's go ahead. You'll have the opportunity to renew the motion, and take it up at that point and articulate as best you can with specificity exactly how he is going to help you. Okay?
Thank you.
Now, let's see what else is on my list. Okay, just lastly, I know that there are some witnesses that are under subpoena, and I just want to make sure that those witnesses, if we do continue this hearing tomorrow, that they show up tomorrow. Is there anybody who's under subpoena that can't show up tomorrow? Please stand up or raise your hand if you cannot, because I will expect anyone under subpoena to show up tomorrow. Okay. All right. Mr. Seitz and Mr. McClendon, are there any other due process type issues that you would like us to consider at this point?
I just have one.
Go ahead.
In order for me to bring this, I would like to have the what do I do? Oh, vanity. Turn to page 9 of Ms. Okun's rebuttal brief.
Okay.
And this is paragraph 8. And the reason why I bring this up is because it does affect a major portion of our response, if any, and probably the prosecution's team. As we explained in our responsive pleadings, the Los Osos Community Service District operates a various specialized functions within very specialized zones of benefit. One of those zones of benefit is, I think, what we call Zone B, which is the fire operations of the district. And in this response, it says, first, the complaint does not allege any violations at the fire division system. So my first observation is it fair for us to assume and for our residents to assume within the Los Osos Community Service District that this board will not seek or consider penalties that would impact the district's fire department?
Ms. Okun or Mr. Briggs, do you want to respond to that?
Actually, that statement was erroneous. The complaint does allege violations at the fire division. It doesn't allege violations at the water district. The district originally had 4 discharges, and the water district discharges were terminated at some time. We didn't have enough evidence to allege any violations because we don't know what date those discharges stopped, but the fire division is still discharging.
Mr. Seitz?
Well, so let me back up then. Let me just, if before we get on to the fire department. Can the board provide our water customers in this zone of benefit that the prosecution team will not seek, and nor will the board consider fines that would impact the district's ability to provide water service within its water service jurisdiction?
What the board's considering is the assessment of fines, and the staff alleged the discharges and the order, the time schedule order, that are the basis of those fines. Part of the district's defense is that it doesn't have the money to pay those fines, but how it ultimately allocates the fines among its ratepayers is up to the district, not the prosecution staff.
And Mr. Seitz, how is this a due process issue?
Well, it's a due process issue because it's a motion in limine. We need to figure out on the run here precisely what it is that is in the complaint. And when you take a look at this paragraph 8 here, and this is, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, we continue to raise our objections is how fast this all came together and how there's a moving target as to what the district is attempting to respond to. First, we look at the complaint and we say, okay, the water department isn't mentioned, and so our water customers can feel free that their reserve account that we depend on to provide water service to our residents isn't going to be subject to the potential for being responsible for paying whatever fines that may be enacted here. Then we read this in number 8, and we see that the fire department and our clients, actually, within our fire department that receive emergency services, they don't have to have fear that their reserves are going to be subject to the orders of the Regional Water Quality Control Board to pay fines. And so from our perspective, we want to have, and I think the chair wants to have the same thing, is that is to have a very narrow issues here presented to the to your board. And if we don't have to worry about our fire department, then we don't, and when we haven't called CDF here, because I think they would have a lot to say about their ability with their budgets to respond to fines. And I think maybe our water department would love to be here if they could respond to fines. But when you read these pleadings, it seems like we don't have to be concerned about our water department responding to fines, and we don't have to worry about our fire department responding to fines.
Okay, let me ask you a few questions, Mr. Seitz. Doesn't the district own fire and water in these departments? Aren't they under your umbrella? Don't you own their assets?
We view this complaint, and this is one of the other things that's always been a moving target for us. Is the complaint addressed solely at time schedule order 00131? Every time we take a look at the pleadings, I get confused. Maybe Mr. McClendon is more omnipotent than I am. But when I look at this complaint, I say, okay, we're worried about 00131, and we're worried about Regional Water Quality Control Board Order 8313. That is the prohibition zone. And then we get mixed in here because within that prohibition zone, the district operates 4 septic tanks, one for the fire department, one for the water department, one for Vista del Oro, and one for Bay Ridge Estates. And it makes a big difference to us as to, I think you'll see it more in our presentation, is what is being asked to be fined here by the Regional Water Quality Control Board. Is it these individual operations that the district does not operate district-wide, but only operates in regards to a particular zone of benefit, or is this much broader? Are we just looking at the enforcement of 00131?
Okay.
And I every time I read these pleadings, I get more confused about that.
Okay. Yeah, let me ask a question of the prosecution staff. Are you pursuing with testimony today and witnesses both the Basin Plan prohibition violations as well as the time schedule order violations?
The complaint is pled in the alternative. There's a time schedule order that's based on violations of the Basin Plan prohibition by these four facilities. The way the complaint is drafted, we calculated the $10,000 per day penalty for all the days that they've been in violation of the time schedule order, and that was the amount we alleged. In the alternative, the district was also violating the Basin Plan prohibition at these three facilities, but again, those allegations are against the district, not the facilities. We will talk about the Basin Plan prohibition because it's relevant to the violations of the time schedule order, but our recommendation is that penalties be assessed based on the daily violations of the time schedule order. So, yes, we will be addressing both, but we're not arguing that the board should impose penalties for the prohibition as opposed to penalties for violation of the time schedule.
Say that last part again. Your recommendation is...
We will be discussing the Basin Plan prohibition.
Right.
But we are recommending that the board assess penalties based on the $10,000 a day penalty and the time schedule order only.
Well, I understand penalties for both, but we can only... Should the board decide on penalties, it would only be for one or the other category, not for both. But I think Mr. Seitz is somewhat confused, and I don't know if it's a relevant thing at this point as to the divisions underneath the CSD that it controls and how an enforcement action may or may not affect those services. I don't know how that information is relevant at this point.
Then, if it pleases the chair, can I just renew this objection when I make my presentation on how a community service district, in particular the Los Osos Community Service District, is actually formed and operated with its various zones of benefit, including the prohibition zone, rather than hashing it out here that may be more, a little more abstruse?
Sure.
Thank you.
That's fine. Okay. Mr. Seitz, any other issues that we should consider at this point before we start?
I guess, John, I think that I
thank the chair for his patience and
okay.
Listening to it.
Should we take a break at this point before we start, or?
Before we take a break, could I ask a quick question?
Sure.
We have Darren Polhemus of the State Board standing by in his office to testify, and I'd like to give him some idea of when we think we're going to get to him. We don't intend to call him as a witness, but I gave him an estimate that I thought that you would want to talk to him sometime between 2 and 4. He can be available later than that, but I don't know, about 7:45.
Is Darren there right now?
Yes.
Darren?
Oh, no, he's not on the phone.
Yeah,
he's
okay.
I have his cell phone number and
okay.
Two secretaries' phone numbers.
Well, Mr. Seitz and Mr. McLennan, should we take a break for a few minutes before we launch into this? Because I would like, once we start with both sides, I'd like that time just to roll, and we'll break in between that. Is that fine with the prosecution team? Take a break
right.
For 10 minutes.
Right, but my question is, during the break, can I call Darren and give him an estimate?
Yes. Of course.
Do you still think before 4 o'clock? Or I'm not sure when you want to call.
Let me pull my crystal ball out.
Excuse me.
Ms. Oaken, my crystal ball, and I don't know. Yeah, probably before 4.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I would say maybe from 3 to 4 he should be online.
Okay, thanks.
All right.